Christmas, and welcome to another festive episode of FW Presents, a proud part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm Ryan Daly, and what kind of Christmas podcast would it be if it didn't include our good friend Kyle Benning? How's it going, Kyle?
Hey, thanks for having me aboard. It's going, I guess, as good as it can be in 2020.
That's always asterisk adjusted for 2020 terms. Like, that's whatever, however you answer. I do have to ask, how are you and your family handling this Christmas? I imagine with health situations at home, you guys are taking a lot of precautions.
Yeah, we're really cutting down on the number of Christmases we have, I guess. Venturing outside the home would be a pretty tight group. We have a pretty tight circle, just pretty much just my parents, my wife's mother, and then my sister and her family. And so really kind of the only circles we interact with, and they're about the only circles either one of them interact with, so I'll really kind of limit it, so won't be seeing much of our grandparents or the kids' great-grandparents at all this year.
That's your pod, I've heard the term called now, like the few people that you were allowed to socialize with to kind of to keep people, especially kids, from going insane is the pod. So yeah, we've basically just got my father-in-law. That's the only person that we saw for Thanksgiving, and that's who we'll see for Christmas.
I actually had to go in and get two chipped teeth repaired today, and that was quite the excitement of just getting out of the house and going and sitting in a dentist office for like an hour. I was like, wow, this is, I couldn't tell you the last time I was outside of my house for an hour. It wasn't, you know, in the car just driving around, so.
Okay. Is there a story behind what chipped the teeth? Is that interesting?
No, it's just from grinding my teeth during the workday while trying to deal with company reorganizations and running a fairly new business line that, you know, launched amidst the pandemic while you have kids screaming in the background and pulling each other's hair and stuff. So I grind my teeth a lot. So
if anybody had a reason to.
Yeah. So, yeah. One was on top on the right side, one was on the bottom on the left side. So, you know, they had my whole mouth shot up with Novocaine. So I couldn't talk like or eat or drink half the day because my lips and mouth didn't work. So.
Well, you sound better now, so let's go. Let's proceed. Folks listening, you could be asking what has brought Kyle and I back together for this holiday season, and it is something we actually talked about last year, and Kyle was smart enough to remind me of it a little while ago. We are finding our joy in a particular intersection of Walt Disney, Carl Barks, Christmas, and ghost stories. That's right, we're talking about Mickey's Christmas Carol, Disney's adaptation of the Charles Dickens novella. I have said it before, when I was growing up, this was my favorite Christmas special, by a pretty wide margin. A Christmas Carol is my favorite Christmas story and my favorite ghost story, and this version has always been my favorite adaptation. There are a lot of really good adaptations, but this one is my favorite. Where do you stand on this one, Kyle?
Yeah, pretty much all those things. So I'm a huge Disney character fan, especially the, you know, the duck characters, especially under Carl Barks' pen and pencil there. This was probably my introduction to Scrooge McDuck. We had this taped off of what I assume was ABC. You know, it was like a Christmas special thing that was on TV that, you know, had the big life-size Mickey and Minnie costumes, you know, at Disney World, and Michael Eisner giving an intro, and it, and this taped, and then with it was Donald's Snowball Fight, and then Pluto's Christmas Tree. Yep. So I had the two shorts in this, kind of, you know, kind of round out an hour programming with those interstitials then with Michael Eisner and the actual Mickey and Minnie, you know, at Disney World, and I absolutely loved that tape as a kid and just watched that over and over again, and so... you know, I was really happy then when this came out on DVD, you know, a few years ago, and was able to snatch it up. And then now, obviously, it's on Disney Plus, and
yes, it is.
My kids absolutely love it. My one daughter, Rowan, is just a huge Mickey and Disney fan, and so we have probably watched it like close to 50 times already this year. So it's a favorite.
Very cool. Yep. A lot of the same. I was going to ask you when you first saw it, and same. Quick, really bit of the history, folks. Mickey's Christmas Carol was distributed by Buena Vista to U.S. theaters. This actually debuted theatrically on December 16th, 1983. It was attached to The Rescuers, which was re-released. Actually, it was released several weeks earlier in the UK, attached to The Jungle Book. The following year, 1984 now, Mickey's Christmas Carol began airing annually on NBC from 1984 until 1990. And after that, after 1990, several other networks would kind of pick it up and share it over the years. I can't say that I saw it its first year of broadcast in 1984 because I was so young, but it's definitely a possibility because my family watched all of those holiday specials, and eventually we started recording them onto one tape that had Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Frosty the Snowman, it did have Pluto's Christmas Tree, Garfield's Christmas Special, and by the end of the 80s, we had the Claymation Christmas Special, too, that I have talked about on the last episode of Fire and Water Records with my brother.
And of course, love that one.
Yeah. And of course, it had Mickey's Christmas Carol because this was always one of my favorites. And yeah, I remember Pluto's Christmas Tree. I remember Donald's Snowfall Fight. And I think there was a Goofy skiing short on the one that I saw, or the one that we had on tape. And I don't know what happened to those, but I do know Pluto's Christmas Tree is also on Disney Plus because I've been watching that with Reese a ton. He loves that one too. He loves seeing Chip and Dale on that one. He hasn't quite made the transfer to Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers. I've tried, but he really loves Mickey's Christmas Carol too. We've watched it a few times.
I think the Goofy skiing one is out there on Disney Plus as well, but is it? Donald's Snowball Fight is not. They do have the Donald Duck hockey champion. There's two other Chip and Dale kind of Christmas ones. Both of them where they kind of square off against Donald. You know, they were kind of introduced as Donald foils. And sadly, two of those aren't on Disney Plus either, but you can find them on YouTube. There's one where they come in and they play with like a bunch of toys and they kind of get in a battle of, you know, shooting toy guns at each other and everything. And that's a lot of fun. And then there's another one where I think they just come in and they're trying to stay warm and get out of the winter snow.
I wonder, I mean, because they do occasionally update with some of their older content. I wonder if maybe they're in the restoration process with some of those shorts, or I can't imagine any kind of like rights issues with the distribution, but I don't know.
So. Yeah, I wouldn't think so.
I mean, they were all made in-house, but
yeah. Donald's Snowball Fight, that was not on the DVD release of the Mickey's Christmas Carol, but it did come out around that same time on a different DVD release, and so I don't know.
Anyway, tons of stuff. There's also, I mean, if anybody's surfing and you're looking for some more, you know, holiday themed within the same realm, the same family, Disney Plus also has both Once Upon a Christmas and Twice Upon a Christmas, both featuring the Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, Goofy family of characters, and those are tons of fun as well. Getting back to Mickey's Christmas Carol, I'll give you the rundown of the plot for anybody who possibly might not know the story of A Christmas Carol. This is just the same story truncated to a short with these family of characters. Ebenezer Scrooge, in this one played by Scrooge McDuck, is a greedy, miserly moneylender who hates everything about Christmas. He hates charity, hates goodwill, hates spending time with his family, especially his nephew Fred, who is Donald Duck in this one. He has an underpaid clerk named Bob Cratchit, played by Mickey Mouse, who is reluctant to give the day off to for Christmas. On Christmas Eve, Scrooge is visited by the ghost of his friend and business partner, Jacob Marley, played by Goofy, who is tortured in the afterlife by dragging heavy chains and weights. Marley warns Scrooge that he will suffer the weight of even more chains if he doesn't change his life before he dies. Later that night, Scrooge is visited one at a time by three spirits. First, the ghost of Christmas past, Jiminy Cricket, shows Scrooge his past when he was happy and enjoyed Christmas and when he was in love, but how his greed cost him the love of his life. Second, the Ghost of Christmas Present, Willie the Giant, shows Scrooge how Bob Cratchit's family spends Christmas Eve together, happy and loving despite their poverty. The ghost warns Scrooge that Bob's sickly child, Tiny Tim, won't survive if Bob's situation doesn't change. Last, the Ghost of Christmas Future, a hooded figure later revealed to be Pete, shows Scrooge a graveyard where Tiny Tim will be buried and mourned by his family, and then a second grave with no mourners and no loved ones. The ghost reveals that this grave is for Scrooge and knocks him into the open grave leading into the fiery pits of hell. Scrooge wakes up Christmas morning knowing he has a second chance to avoid his future. He embraces the spirit of Christmas with love and kindness and charity. He donates money to the poor. He commits to spending Christmas dinner with his nephew, and he brings toys to Bob Cratchit's family, pledging to make Bob a partner so that he can take care of Tiny Tim. This one was directed by Bernie Mattinson. The cast included Alan Young voicing Scrooge, Wayne Allwine voicing Mickey Mouse, and who is Bob Cratchit, Eddie Carroll voiced Jiminy Cricket / the Ghost of Christmas Past, Will Ryan voicing Willie and Pete, the other two ghosts, and Clarence Nash voicing Donald Duck and Fred. The music was by Irwin Kostel. What do you think about this one? Well, why did you want to talk about this one so much?
I absolutely love this one. Like you, this is my favorite interpretation or adaption of the Christmas Carol. And there are a lot to choose from. If you guys have time, go out there and just look at Christmas Carol on like Wikipedia, and it talks about all the theatrical adaptions. But then so many of those were taped live or had filmed sessions that were released on TV pretty much since the debut of TV. I mean, it's literally like hundreds or thousands of adaptions in the English language. It's got to be the most adapted story of all time, I think.
It's definitely up there.
I don't know what I would have seen first, this or Mickey and the Beanstalk. You know, obviously Willie the Giant from both there. And so I always think of whenever I see Willie, when you go to the Ghost of Christmas Present, all I can think of is Smoke from the Mickey and the Beanstalk. But and then I think this had to have been my first introduction to, you know, the character of Pete, and what a great fit for him here. He a jerk in the Mickey Mouse Once and Twice Upon a Christmas specials. But line, and then the empty grave opens up with flames. You're Ebenezer, the richest man in the cemetery. God, that terrified me as a kid. Absolutely love it. And so it's just a great adaption, and they really use a lot of A-listers, right? But this was really kind of what put Scrooge on the map on the animation side of Disney. I mean, he'd made a few tiny little appearances before this, but you know, Alan Young would voice him here, and then go on to voice the character over the next 20 years with all the DuckTales episodes and tie-ins and video games and everything. So this is really kind of ground zero for Scrooge on the animation side of Disney, where I think probably most people are certainly around our age are familiar with him, which was a fitting introduction. Scrooge is a character debuted in a Christmas-themed story of four-color comics back in 1947. So, just shy of 40 years later, he makes another huge debut in the animation side and garners a whole nother age of audience here. So I love this one. It's a blast.
Yeah, I knew nothing about the comics, so this was definitely my introduction to Scrooge, and I would have assumed he was almost an invention just for the story. I would have said, well, the character is named Scrooge, so that's who he is. He's just like that. They just invented a duck character named Ebenezer Scrooge to base this on. So it wasn't until I saw DuckTales like a few years later when they introduced Scrooge McDuck. I was like, oh, yeah, they're spinning that same character off and everything. It was after that even that I found out. I was like, oh, this character actually goes way back and he has more of a history. I would have thought he was invented in the 1980s for all I knew. There's so much about this one. And I get like, I mean, I don't know if it's just, it's the time, but it's like, for being a kid's cartoon starring these characters, you watch it again, it's still, it's dark. And not just the story for being, you know, like a ghost story, which all ghost stories are fundamentally redemption stories. They offer that chance because the nature of ghosts and ghost stories is to have some sort of warning or some sort of present this idea. You know, it's a cautionary tale type of thing, that you can find spiritual redemption, or, you know, a kind of moral or social justice if you, you know, take, if you heed this warning and take the appropriate steps. And we do see that that's where Scrooge goes by the end of this. But beyond just like that theme, that subject matter, just like the night when Scrooge is just walking home through the snow and London is deserted, it just like the palette, the color and everything is really dark, and his townhouse and everything. That's always just struck me how moody and spooky it was. You know, it was sort of, it reminded me, like, years later when I saw Batman the Animated Series, how they talked about how they were just animating on black paper instead of white, and to kind of give it that dark, saturated feel.
Yeah, exactly. It always makes you think too, right? You think about you know, driving home in the dark, and maybe it's cloudy out, or you can't really see the moon, and you get a fumble through the garage or into your entryway, and it's dark and it kind of creeps you out. Imagine doing all that while you're trying to carry a candle in a drafty house. It's always like, oh yeah, man, mm-hmm. man, that would have been creepy walking around 200 years ago. Well, not even that, 100 years ago, right? So I think this one, because it is such a classic and such a great adaption. I mean, it's already lived on, coming up on 40 years now. Crazy to think that, you know, as long as Disney is around, this thing is going to live on, and it's going to be out there too. And I think that's great too, because there's a number of kind of tertiary characters within the Disney staple. They get a lot of visibility in this. And in a way, it kind of keeps those characters' legacies alive as well. I mean, you have the Cratchit family. You know, there's a daughter, Martha Cratchit, and then, you know, the two sons, Tiny Tim and Peter Cratchit. I think most people probably look at them just like, oh, it's a mini Mickey or a mini Minnie, but those are actual, you know, Disney characters. And just like Donald has, you know, his three nephews, you know, Mickey had twin nephews, Morty and Monty, Morty and Ferdy. And those would be, you know, who play Peter Cratchit and Tiny Tim here. And then Minnie likewise had twin nieces. And so you had Millie or Melody Mouse that made up those. And, you know, Daisy, she has triplet nieces as well, as April, May, and June. They live on in the fantastic, it's going to skip my brain. Three Caballeros cartoon. There you go.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
That is fairly recent. You know, the role that typically you would have Huey, Dewey, and Louie in that is instead played by April, May, and June in that as kind of supporting younger characters, supporting Donald. So it's good to see them live on there. But it's amazing how many of the other kind of main characters that have speaking lines here pull from one other, probably the single spookiest thing Disney's ever done, something you talked about this fall, the Ichabod and Toad cartoon.
Yeah, Mr. Toad. Yeah, that's where we get some, like, the two guys collecting for the poor were from that.
Right. Yep. The Weasels themselves, I think they made their debut there.
Yep. I think Fezziwig was Mr.
Yes, you're right. Yep, correct. Yep. The J. Thaddeus Toad playing Fezziwig. Yep, also from Ichabod and Toad. He's the Toad there. So it's cool on that front, right? That it kind of showcases some of Disney's older characters that really don't have too much presence, or probably, you know, really didn't have much presence at the time this was made either. So they were all interesting choices, but it's a great legacy piece to allow those characters to continue to live on.
Right. Right. And Jiminy Cricket, who would have been Pinocchio and everything, like,
yep.
Which I'm trying to, I probably would have seen them around the exact same time. My very unreliable memory is telling me that I already knew Jiminy Cricket from Pinocchio when I saw this, but who the heck knows? I would have been three, so I don't know. I can't tell you the exact order, but I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, it would have been right around the same time for me too. When I would have seen both of these, and you know, I'd see the Weasels in Who Framed Roger Rabbit shortly after this as well too. So you know, they were kind of big henchman character in my mind there. Two of my favorite animated shorts movies featured them. So.
Yeah, great villains. Yeah. Just like starting off, like just with the opening titles, the title cards, we get this nice, really nice music, but the title cards look like they're on old parchment. It's like that really kind of like dirty yellowed paper with like wrinkly.
Yeah, the sepia tones.
Yeah, yeah. We get the whole credits, and I noticed John Lasseter, the future head of Pixar, gets an additional crew credit in this one. He was just, they just credits him as the talents of and he's one of a number of people on this. So I don't actually know if he was working on the writing side or animation side. I'm not sure what function he had. It's just an additional crew credit, but interesting. And then a few little details that they throw in. The first time we meet Scrooge, the first thing we hear about him is he mentions that his partner was dead, and he left him enough money to pay for his tombstone, but Scrooge had him buried at sea. You know, it's like, okay, I get it, you're a cheapskate. But then I actually started thinking, I was like, would that actually be cheaper? Like, would you have to, like, charter a boat to take the body out there? Or could you just, like, dump the body on, like, whatever, you know, freighter is heading out that direction? Like,
yeah, I don't know. It kind of, I guess, depends on what Scrooge's other business ventures are, if he is involved in importing or exporting at all, and it's shipping something across the channel, and it's just like, yeah, I'm just going to dump him here. So, I don't know.
So, when I was a kid, and I don't know if this is just like how my ears worked or if this was the intention, I could never understand anything Donald Duck said. Like, not like just like, you know, he has that very heavy like voice, like nothing. I could not make out a word he ever said. I had to piece it together just through the context of how other people like responded to him.
I say bah, humbug.
I don't care. I say Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas.
Well said, Master Fred.
Cratchit, what are you doing?
I was just trying to keep my hands warm, sir.
And what are you doing here, nephew?
I've come to give you a wreath and invite you to Christmas dinner.
Well, I suppose you're going to have plump goose with chestnut dressing?
Yep.
And will you have plum pudding and lemon sauce?
Yeah, plum pudding.
And candied fruits with spiced sugar cakes?
Yeah, will you come?
Are you daft, man? You know I can't eat that stuff. Here's your wreath back. Now out, out, out! Bah! Humbug.
Merry Christmas!
And a bah humbug to you.
Is his voice that off, or is it just me? Is it just my ears?
I don't know. I think there was a lot of shorts and stuff earlier when we were kids that he was pretty indistinguishable. I think I've always been able to make out, you know, his few lines in this, you know, certainly the Merry Christmas one and well said, Mr. Fred, follows it after that. But I've also seen it hundreds of times. So maybe just because I've understood it the last couple hundred times, I don't know, maybe I haven't always. But he certainly seems with the stuff they put out now to be more understandable than he was when we were kids. You know, the other famous cartoon duck then at that point was Daffy Duck, and obviously you could always understand him despite the lisp there, and so certainly contrasted to him, he was a lot harder to understand.
Yeah, again, like just I'm just shocked by like how spooky and how dead the whole city looks, and like I just know that sense that atmosphere just like wait, I mean that was one of the things that I was fascinated by this while I was watching, because I was like, it's Christmas, is, you know, everything's supposed to be jolly and bright and giving and warm and family. I was like, but you can add this tinge of horror to it. That just seemed really, that contrast just fascinated me as a kid, and that's partly why it stuck with me. Just the fact that we could introduce Goofy as a ghost. But he shows up, and I love the visual gag when he says, "You will be visited by three spirits," and he holds up two fingers.
That's great. Yeah.
And his one of his exit lines before his, you know, comic pratfall down the stairs and everything, he says Scrooge's chains will be heavier than his if he doesn't change. I always like in the actual text from the story, but Dickens. Marley makes the point that Scrooge's chains were the exact same length and weight as Marley's when Marley died 7 years ago, and in the time since, they have only increased in heaviness and weight and everything like that. And that sort of that terrifying thought really like freaks Scrooge out. And I always thought that was really powerful the way they phrased it that way.
Yep.
But yeah. Just going through the ghosts, you mentioned it. We get Daisy appearing in the Ghost of Christmas Past segment as Belle.
Yeah, and I love that party scene at Fizzywigs there. That's never fails whenever that music comes on. I pick up the two girls and we dance around a waltz around the living room while that plays.
It's a toe tap. It's a groove. Yeah.
Then, you know, Blaze, typically he feels like he got shorted, so we got to rewind it, and then he gets his turn too. So all three kids get a little dance piece there, and we watch that two or three times to make sure everybody gets equal time. So
it's a good one.
What does Reese think of it? The one thing that is off from Scrooge, he doesn't have his kind of signature overcoat here, whether it be the red or the blue one. He's wearing, you know, more of a beat up kind of plainer overcoat than kind of his signature classic look or whatever. But the other thing is his kind of his longer hair of his
hair that kind of floats out
like wings on the side. It's gray instead of white, where it's traditionally white. And so because of that, I think if I recall, Reese's kind of entry to this Disney world is Mickey Mouse Clubhouse.
And he thinks of the professor.
Yes, so does my daughter. Anytime it comes on, she goes, "Professor Von Drake." Oh, that's Scrooge. So, yeah, that's funny. I was curious if he had the same take. Yeah, because of the gray hair. So
that's a good question. I don't know if he's cross associated them or not. I should find that out. But I don't know if he thinks of them as the same thing. He does. He's watched those, but he started to watch the DuckTales, both the new and old versions of that, well, like the 90s and the more contemporary ones. He's seen a few episodes of both of them. That's a good question. I don't know if he thinks about if he confuses the two characters. Yeah. When Willie shows up, there's always that spot where inside Scrooge's bed, and he's got like the four-poster bed, and he's pulling the curtains back. And after he first sees Willie, and Willie like smells him, and Scrooge is hiding. When he draws the curtains back and it's just Willie's face pressed right up there, his giant eyeball, it looks like almost like a painted effect that they just animated the eye moving, but it's almost like in the background or something. There's some weird effect on his cheek there.
Yeah, and I think they did the same thing. It's almost like that scene is lifted from the Mickey and the Beanstalk. I believe when trying to chase the three of them around inside the castle, I think they hide in like a lock or, and he looks through a keyhole. It's a similar thing.
Oh, they're doing the same gag. I bet you're right.
At least that's how it's ingrained in my mind. But man, it's been years since I've seen that feature. So maybe I'm misremembering, but yeah, whenever that pops up, it kind of gives me a flash of it. It also reminds me of the Mickey and the Beanstalk with him too. Cause I think that same painted look occurs there.
Mm-hmm. The present, thing with seeing the Bob Cratchit family is pretty short, and then we transition right away to the Ghost of Christmas Future, who is smoking a cigar, and that's kind of like one of the funniest things. It's like, oh yeah, Disney show where the character is just sitting there smoking, of course. And then they cut to Tiny Tim's grave and the family mourning and the anguish, just the feeling of just being destroyed on Mickey's face, and I mean, I know who I'm talking to, but I just as fathers of young kids, I mean, I see this completely differently today. But even as a kid, I was like, "This is a really emotional, heartbreaking scene." And now to watch it in a new light, a new context, it's like, "Oh my God, I can't believe they're doing this!" Like, who would be monstrous enough to show this to a kid? But we do, and we watch it, and. And it's crushing. Like just the plaintive music in that scene, and the way Mickey can only just hold on to that crutch and just clutch it to his chest before he has to pass it away. It's devastating for me.
yes, it is. It's crushing. You can see the tears kind of welding up in his eyes there, and he's trying to hold them back. And yeah, it's. Yeah. It's always been a tough scene, but yeah, the added dimension of being a father, adds even more there.
Oh no, Spirit! I didn't want this to happen. Tell me these events can yet be changed.
And then you're right, the grave diggers with the two weasels also smoking, and just such lovable little villains and rogues that you can hate. The ghost strikes that match, and we reveal that it's Pete, and he delivers that line, and just whacks him. And it's not like and it's not like Scrooge falls directly into the pit. He's like scrambling and holding on as the coffin opens up, and these flames lap at him. And as Pete is laughing and laughing, and Scrooge is screaming that he'll change. It's like, this is a terrifying moment. But again, that's the whole point. That's the whole idea, is the sort of scared straight nature is you have to recognize, you have to see this. This is what you're heading towards if you don't move. So the nature of the ghost story has to get that terrifying at the very end. So,
have you ever looked around at the tombstones that are in the graveyard?
And no, seen some are the names there, on there? Easter eggs there?
Yes, there are. I meant to watch it again today and look and write it down, but I forgot. But off the top of my head, I remember one is Gladys Knight.
Really?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of... God, I can't remember who the other
Gladys
one is.
Gladys Knight wasn't dead.
I'm pretty sure. I know. But it's just like, oh, there it is. And yeah, it's pretty funny. But, you know, that one, you know, that's a pretty distinct name. It jumps right out.
Okay, here, I just looked something up on the DVD print reveals the graveyard scene also includes tombstones containing famous performers. Gladys Knight and the Pips, Bob Mills, and Warren Oates.
There you go.
Wow. I wonder what the connection, did they all have hits around that time?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Just maybe the animator, a certain animator was just a really big fan of their music and was like, hey, I'm going to stick this in there.
That's weird. Because alternatively, it could be seen as a threat.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, I guess this is supposed to be the future, so.
Yep. That's true.
Weird, weird. All right.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, when he wakes up and it's, yeah, the whole redemptive ending at the end when just chucking bags of money at the guys from Mr. Toad. Yeah, just a, it's like I'm here to give you, and then toys. Like, yes, toys. No. I love that. Love that line.
Merry Christmas, huh? I have another bundle for you.
But sir, it's Christmas Day.
Christmas Day, indeed. Just another excuse for being lazy. And another thing, Cratchit. I've had enough of this half day off stuff. You leave me no alternative but to give you...
Toys!
Yes, toys. No. I'm giving you a raise and making you my partner.
A partner?
Yeah, it's super uplifting, right? I mean, drops the bag of toys and, you know, the huge turkey pops out too. And all I can think is there's going to be turkey juice all over those toys. And there's probably like lint and everything from that cloth bag over that turkey, but you know, they just got done like splitting a sparrow between the five of them, so they don't care. But,
what's she cooking, a canary?
You know, and then you know, the music swells back up and you return to the same song that kind of opens it, but it's, you know, instead of the sepia tones that kind of opens with the, you know, seeing the poor slums of the city, instead it's bright colored, it's sunshine, you know, everybody's celebrating their Christmas Day, and you know, you end on such a higher note than what you started on. And you really feel the joy, the more joyous music. I mean, you're more of a music guy than I am. I don't know if they changed the key of the song or whatever, but you know, it feels like the song, the opening kind of matches more the sepia old weathered tone that then opens on kind of the slum of the city. Whereas this, how the song sounds here really matches the bright color and
the
uplifting swing you end the movie on.
Yeah, it seems like it's like, I don't know if it's even, I don't know if it's sped up or it almost feels a little bit sped up, but it definitely ends on like a higher key at the end. Beautiful little note there. It's 20 something minutes, so it's just a very short, very truncated version. But it's just so, I can watch it by myself in preparation for this or with a kid, and it still gives me the same joy and pleasure just like looking at this classic little tale done in this style, and it's so much fun. And yeah, and this is a Christmas when we need as much fun and as much joy as we can get, so yeah. So thank you very much for reminding me to do this.
this was a blast. Glad it worked out. So this is a favorite of mine. I think it's my favorite, you know, animated Christmas feature. So, and one we watch a ton of. So,
oh yeah,
it's great to talk about it.
Yeah. Anything else that you're working on that you'd like to tell the listeners before we go?
Yeah, I will have a Christmas episode coming out with Michael Lane over on his podcast feed, Comics in the Golden Age, where we talk about a Golden Age Carl Bark story as well as more modern story that was originally a story produced in Italy and was brought over and translated to the U.S. Just 5 years ago via the IDW series. And then I'll also have a Christmas, at least one Christmas-themed solo podcast dropping. Already have it recorded. I just need to touch up some stuff and let it go. And that'll actually be covering Scrooge's first appearance in the Christmas on Bear Mountain story from 1947. So that is on my podcast feed, KSCGSF, which is short for King Size Comics, Giant Size Fun. But, that's where you can find me.
Awesome. Awesome. Definitely check that out, listeners. Yeah, Kyle, thank you again for being my now turning into my annual Christmas guest. I'm sure we'll have stuff to talk about next year too. This is always a whole lot of fun, and listeners, check this video out. You won't regret it. It's such a joy and such a treat if you haven't already. That's gonna be all for this one. Listeners, thank you for tuning in. If you like this discussion, please support the show on social media by liking or favoriting the posts on Facebook and Twitter. You can leave a comment on the episode post at fireandwaterpodcast.com, and you can always go to iTunes or Apple Podcasts and leave a nice 5-star review for FW Presents or any other show on the Fire and Water Network. If you really like the show, please consider donating to our Patreon page. Go to patreon.com/FWPodcasts for additional information. Until next time, thank you for listening. Have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas, Bob.
And God bless us, everyone.
Joy to the children, far and dear. What a wondrous time of year. Isn't it just grand to say, Merry, Merry Christmas.
Merry, Merry Christmas.
Merry, Merry Christmas.